This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast. I'm Pete, and of course I'm with the one and the only, the currently employed actor, Johnny Cesaro. Johnny, man, congratulations on your part. How's it going?
Oh, well, thank you. Well, employed isn't, well, they pay it with one free drink at the end of each performance.
Hey.
I guess that's technically...
Well,
no, it's all volunteer, but...
Well, we'll call it okay, the... Your hobby. There you go.
Okay, yeah.
Your fulfilled hobby.
Thank you, though. But yeah, the part I've been practicing for, and I went in, I had a decent singing audition, but a great line read. And this is the part I've been just really wanted to play. And I think it came through because I was like, I got it. And they're not splitting the performances with anyone else. So I am committed to. Three shows, like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, from July to October.
Great way to tell us what the part is and what movie and what the play it is.
But it's Moonface Martin, Public Enemy number 13 in the musical Anything Goes, which is a
classic.
A classic from the 30s that's been revamped and redone plenty of times. And it's great. It's all Cole Porter songs. It's funny. Like, it's not dated humor. It's actually witty and funny because in Broadway in the 30s, you could be more risque and smart on stage than you'd be censored in the movies. And this part is, like, the funny – he's the comic relief in an already comic show, basically. And he's a gangster from New York, so I think the voice alone is just like, yeah, we don't care if he could – He can croak his way through the two songs. He's already got the voice for the character. But yeah, so that's my news. But you, my friend, wrestling wise.
Yeah, man. I just
quite the experience.
Yeah, I went to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame and I just recently got back. A 3-day event. And I just got to say, man, how incredible that place was. I get into Wichita Falls on Thursday morning, like around 9 o'clock or something. And I can't check into my hotel till after 2. If I check in early, I got to pay like some $25 extra fee. So I'm like, fuck that. I can run some errands.
Fuck you, pal.
Yeah. I'll screw that. So I'm running around Wichita Falls with my laptop and my bag rolling around Wichita Falls.
Dude.
And so I'm running errands and it's all fine and all that jazz. So I finally check in. And I first thing I'm like, man, what's on the agenda? I have 4 hours or 3 hours until the show starts, which is the grappler. Len Denton was doing like a comedy thing, which was cool. It was comedy, but based on his wrestling thing, along with some special guests. And so I'm like, well, I'll go to the hall first. So I gotta get there, and I pick up my package of what I needed for the weekend. And I start walking around, and it's just absolutely incredible. I'm blown away right off the bat. I mean, you walk in, the first thing you see is the Sportatorium sign from World Class the building, and it goes, and it's just incredible. It's with so many amazing things to look at. And while I'm in there, of course, one of the Hall of Fame people getting inducted this year. Was George Napolitano, and him and The Aftermags are probably two of the most influential magazines from the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. Would you say, Johnny?
Oh, completely, because The Aftermags were the ones that, they had good photos, they had great photos and all, but it was more about the stories and everything, and the rankings and stuff, and the Napolitano mags, the stories weren't important, but the photographs were outstanding. Yep. They were like Fangoria.
Yes.
Yeah, it was the best.
And so there's tons of his pictures hanging up. And cool. So having him there, and I'm just eavesdropping, he's telling the people he's going into the history of all the pictures that are hanging up. And I'm
neat.
Of course, I'm like a pig in slop at this. And I'm just trying not to. And the thing is, it's just, at this point, it's just me and the Napolitano party in the museum. So obviously, they can tell I'm eavesdropping. And I'm not the. I can be kind of shy, but I'm not a shy person in nature. So, of course, I'm firing off questions to him, asking him all these questions. What happened here? What's the story on this picture and all this stuff? And he's really a super nice guy and answering all my questions. But really, I mean, honestly, can you ask for almost a better tour guide?
Shit, no, man.
Fucking Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame museum.
I was hanging out with George Napolitano, you know, and he gave me a tour, you know, just an impromptu tour of his work. Oh, Jesus Christ. Now, I know for any of you who are younger, you might know the reference, but if you're our age, you know, and older, that's big.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's, like, so many pictures, like, with Bruno and Superstar Graham so in cool. there. So there's all these great ones. There's a great one with, I mean, there's him on... from Japan with Hogan, Inoki, Andre, I think the Bulldogs. I can't remember it all. I probably have it on my thing, and it's just incredible. There's all these different artifacts, and like there's separate things. There's like a booking office, and it had Fritz von Erich's booking sheets for all of 1981. So I took pictures of every sheet of that. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's you sent me one of those pictures.
Yeah.
And told me what it was. And you were sending pictures. I'm like, this is this guy's robe and this guy's robe. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. But you sent me a picture of Fritz von Erich's booking ledger. And yeah. It's leather bound and it's handwritten.
Yeah.
You know, and I went, oh, my God. To yeah. me, that is, I mean, were you allowed to flip through it?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, that's amazing.
Because everything was laminated, so, you know,
oh, that's
yeah.
cool. That is so cool.
Yeah, really neat. And the booking office was based on Paul Bosch's booking office.
Mm.
So there's a lot of Paul Bosch stuff in there. There was, like, a picture of him. Like, it was actually Paul Bosch's booking office they took it off of.
Oh,
and so if you see the pictures of Paul Bosch's, this pretty much looked identical to that. You know, because you had Bosch with his K. Jarrell jeweler thing with the diamond thing and this and that. So yeah, just really neat. And they had a ring in there, and then just a bunch of people donating their stuff, like from Mick Foley to Johnny Rods to George Animal Steel to Pat Patterson to Valentine to Bill Eady. I mean I'm leaving people off. I mean, there's just so much stuff like that to look at. Stan Hansen, the Von Erichs, the Freebirds. I mean, if you're, especially, it was definitely influenced mostly by Texas wrestling WWF wrestling. But it's so cool just checking it all out. And
yeah, that sounds awesome.
All the little neat and nooks and crannies in there. Yeah, I spent close to like 2 hours in the damn thing. And I was just thought it was really, really cool. And it was just, amazing because it's the only physical Hall of Fame in existence. And just seeing all the stuff they have, it's just really, I mean, it takes you back to wrestling in the 80s, really. It's definitely 80s themed. I mean, of course, there's stuff more before that. Don't get me wrong, but
so be honest. Did you even briefly consider stealing something?
No, but I was walking around with a bag in my hand. I'm like, I wonder if they think I'm. And then I'm in there, and Tiger Conway Jr. rolls in,
and of course
I'm marking out because he's been one of my favorite guys on the NW On Demand.
Me
footage.
Too.
Yeah, and so I'm just. Waiting. I didn't want to interrupt him having a conversation with anybody. So finally I get a hold of him, and he's blown away about how I'm going on about his matches and stuff.
He's probably scared. He's like, crazy motherfucker knows more about my career than I do.
Yeah, I'm explaining it to him, and it was cool, and he's like, yeah, yeah. And first he's a little funny. He's egging me. First he's just totally kayfabing me as a joke. And he's like, yeah, in reality, I could have whipped Lou Fez's ass and Buddy Rogers, but they kept me down. I'm like, well? And he saw my face looking all like, what? And he's like, I'm kidding you, man.
That's funny.
Yeah. And
that's funny.
Super nice guy. Yeah, we were able to have a good conversation about his matches, and he brought up, and he goes, yeah, and I was talking to him, and you could tell in the commentary, Paul had a real affinity for you and Gino, because it felt like he really kind of broke you guys in a way. He goes, oh, yeah, definitely, we had a great relationship with Mr. Bosch, and he goes, and one of the things he used to love using me with is the midgets, and so I got to bring in the Ivan. Of course, I'm bringing up the Ivan Terrible matches.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. Awesome.
And he's talking about it. He goes, yeah, I remember that. And, you know, and he was just blown away. I mean, I think a lot, because Houston is kind of an area that people just don't remember, and the television wasn't prominent, and except for in Houston. And so when these guys, and like a lot of Tiger Conway's footage is on stuff, like I know he worked the Carolinas for a while, but it was like before the television boom, where there's really not a whole lot. He was there like in 81 and 82 and 83-ish. And before we got a lot of the TV out there, you know, it was kind of when they were running, when they had the three booking off, not booking offices, but the three bookers, where you had Wahoo booking part of the territory. And then you had Gary Hart booking another section of the territory. And there was one other person booking another section of the territory, all under the auspices of Dory Funk Jr. And so some of the TV, they only showed parts of the TV, you know what I'm saying, per town. So a lot of it, a lot of his career isn't on tape, you know. And now with the Houston, with the NWA On Demand, it is. And so I'm able to, you know, talk to him about it. And so, you know, so that was just pretty cool. And then Tatsumi Fujinami shows up, and you know, and I'm talking to him, so I don't know if he knows English real well, but I just, you know, got bow like a stupid Japanese man. A little one, not a big one.
And then he looked at his friend and said in Japanese, and what a mark.
The Hall of Fame thing was really cool, and then then that evening we did the comedy thing, and that was a blast, and all the guys were...
You know, because I was going to ask if you went to that, because nothing screams comedy more than the name of Len Denton.
Yeah.
Is he funny?
He was entertaining. He was just telling road stories and stories, and they were but he's putting a funny spin on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, was he a stand-up comedian where he's running jokes at you 24/7? No. But he was just telling stories.
Some of these guys are actually trying that.
Yeah, you know? I know. Well, it's a gig now. But he was funny. He was entertaining. That's the key. And then we got a Q&A with Susan Green, who went into the Hall of Fame. She worked Houston. We haven't seen her on the footage yet. We had, who else did it? We had Tiger Conway Jr., Eddie Mansfield, and Ross Hart. And just, you know, they're all great. Everybody was real easy to get photos with. I mean, I took photos. I mean, if everyone saw my, you know, check out my Twitter.
Did you speak with Mansfield at all?
Oh, yeah, and I'll get to that later.
Okay.
But you could tell when he's doing his Q&A, he's like one of those wrestlers that are full of shit in a good way, you know?
I love it.
Yeah.
Real quick, one thing I always hate when I see on message boards and what have you, people fucking getting angry about wrestlers being full of shit. And I'm just like, that's part of the charm. Okay.
Yeah, and one of his was that him and Tiger Conway Jr. are the only wrestlers ever to sell out Armadillo without a funk on the card. So that was one of his big talking points was, and which is probably, you know, wrestler full of shit,
That's a very specific category he created there. I'm like, couldn't even look that up?
Yeah, I know, exactly. And I just got a kick out of it. And then I talked to him for a little bit at night, but we didn't really get a. He was too busy. He was, that dude was drinking some beer, and God bless him. But he found some marks who were buying him beer, so. He took the picture, but you know, he was definitely wanted that beer train to keep on going, and so that's cool.
Should have bought him a beer.
Yeah, I could have done that. But hey, it was all a long weekend, so I didn't want to. I was in a town by myself, so I wasn't drinking at all, because sometimes it's like. Because I was walking from the place, from the hotel to this, it was like a 20-minute walk, which is not far or anything, but when you're walking back at like 10:30 at night, and you're not 100% sure where the hell you're fucking going, and you're in this kind of, you know, it's just...
10:30? Pshaw.
Yeah, I know, but...
I've done that at 2:30.
Yeah, I know, but you're in your town. Does that make sense?
No, I've done that. I have a bad... Not anymore, but I used to have a bad habit of doing that in places I'd never been before.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. And there's no one around, so it's just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just eerily quiet as you're walking home. So I'm sure if I had drinks, I'd probably be really paranoid. But
I was hoping you got to say to him, Mr. Mansfield, you know, you're really good.
Right. And so.
Yeah, whatever, kid. Buy me alcohol.
Exactly. So then, we ended up doing that. You know, everyone's really cool, really nice. Can't put over Ross Hart enough as a super nice guy, man. Just really. He's like, we got to take a picture. He goes, hey, make sure it looks good. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And, really nice guy. And then,
now, I know I'm going to sound so wrestling dumb here, but he's one of the Hart brothers, right?
Yeah. He's the historian of the family. Okay. And they announced at that, Q&A that, the next thing they're working on in the Hall of Fame for the third level floor is there. And yeah, everyone's probably, if you hear this, why don't you put it on the bottom? But they're going to do a Hart family dungeon, based on the history of the Hart family.
You know why? Because it's a lot easier to build up than it is to dig down.
And it's a giant building, Johnny. This thing is like 20 stories tall.
I see.
But the Hall of Fame right now is only on like the first floor, really. And there's really not a second floor. It's just it's like an overlook. So they're going on to the third floor. But it would be a lot easier. I mean, you don't want to have to take everything you have on the bottom floor and move it up three floors. So you have the thing called the dungeon on the bottom. Does that make sense?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So that's the next
thing. And really, if you want people to come there, do you really want the first thing that they say is to be a recreation of the dungeon?
Exactly.
From all the descriptions you've heard about it, you're like, ugh.
Yeah, I know. Something I'm going to email Cowboy Johnny Mattel on, which I think is a pretty interesting idea. If they're going forward with the dungeon idea. Maybe do an interactive thing where they take noises, like maybe they have some old Stu Hart stretching people, and you do the sounds of the dungeon.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, I know, but still, man, I think it'd be kind of cool.
I thought you could go with people could sign up to be stretched in the middle of the ring and made to cry by an old man.
Exactly.
$50 for that shit.
Exactly. And then day two... it was a show. Normally they do it outside, but it was raining. So I get to the Hall of Fame, and that's where I see, no, that's not where I see Mansfield. So I get there, and I look around a little bit more. I mean, even though I'm just burning time. And then I head over to the show, and they had one of the funnest shows I've been to in years. It was such an old school crowd, and they were. There was no "this is awesome" chance or "both these guys" chance. Everything was built on heat. It was all, it was all built about cheating and you know, good guys versus bad guys. A lot of kids in the audience. It was honestly one of the funnest shows I've been to, and nothing was like blow away matches. They're all entertaining matches. Don't get me wrong, but it was just. good guy versus bad guy. The first three, there's only a five match show. The first three matches, everything stayed in the ring. The fourth match, they finally allowed you to go out onto the floor, and that because that was leading into a double disqualification to set up the next show for these guys to be main eventing. And then we had an old school, like 25-minute tag team match. It felt like a very 80s spot show. So it was so fitting to go with the Hall of Fame. It felt like something if you were, you know, going to your armory or your local high school and having like 500 people for a spot show from the 80s. And that's what it felt like. And I thought the heat was incredible. I was able to start so many chants, like, make that, I mean, and the people are going along with it, you know, not these people, you know, and I hate shitting
these
on,
people.
I hate shitting on these people.
These people?
These curbs.
What do you mean, these people?
These people, these curbs fans, with those shitty fucking sayings, like, this is awesome.
Archie
guys.
Bunker over here.
I know.
Yeah, jeez. Jeez, these kids, this is awesome chance.
I felt like I was in a time warp when I was with
the
show.
That's always fun.
And it was, I was like, oh God, I wish I could go to more wrestling shows like this. Mm-hmm. And it, but it shows you, you can, if you use smart booking and you book good versus bad, you don't need to bring in, I mean, it probably, and it, because of the rain, like last year I was talking to somebody and, there, and he was telling me that they drew about 2,000 people to the thing. This year was like 500 or 600 because it was indoors in the rain. But it's still, man, I mean, and it got over, the crowd, the matches got over, and it was really cool.
Well, man, you're getting so excited. It's a good thing that they didn't run out of fucking picante sauce, and someone brings out one, and they look at the label and go, this is from New York City, New York City. Get a rope.
And then the other
get the fuck out of here.
Some of the other cool things was, like for breakfast, I'd run into some of the old wrestlers I ran into this one guy named Bump Johnson who,
Bump Johnson?
Yeah, he used to be a ref for World Class and, yeah, I mean, like, hey, sit on down, and you know, it was just—it was cool listening to him tell stories about the territories and the guys being around, and he talks.
I've never heard of Bump Johnson, but that is the greatest name,
isn't it?
Ever, yeah. For a ref, you're a referee, Bump Johnson.
Yeah,
you know that guy was gonna get the shit knocked out of him.
Yep, and I know his first name was Bump. It might not have been Johnson, but it was Bump something.
Whatever.
But it was really interesting hearing him tell stories. And then there's like a bunch of just territorial guys who traveled, just underneath wrestlers were all there. But they're at the hotel and listening to them tell stories and this and that. Terry Gordy's widow's there. The lady who Fritz Von Erich put in charge of the Freebirds when they were in town were there, was that with the thing, and you can imagine the story she has. I mean, the scars that lady probably has.
I can only imagine. There was the time they were spit roasting me, and Buddy Jack was just cackling in the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerking off.
And the other thing is. And this lady's like some grandma now.
Oh, no.
Like you're old.
Dude, that'll age you.
Yeah.
That Freebird lifestyle will age you.
Oh, man. And then, the head of security for World Class was there. You remember him with the big cowboy hat?
Oh, that dude, yeah.
Yeah, he was
really?
There.
He's still alive?
Yep.
How old is he?
I didn't recognize him. Does he bump? Like, you didn't see him? Like I go, dude, I wasn't working in the territories.
I wasn't working
in the territories. I go, I'm a fan, but I mean, you might look, I did the same to you, but man, I just saw him from TV, so this is like, 30-odd some odd years ago, and he had a cowboy hat on.
They totally accepted you.
Yeah.
You're one of the boys. You know him. Come on, don't you know him?
Yeah, and then he's like, you didn't see Frogman? And I'm like, no. Frogman LeBlanc, you remember that jobber?
Austin always talks about him.
Yep, he was there, and I like I was looking at him because I'm like, this guy looks familiar to me, and I couldn't put two and two together, but it was the Frogman later on, and then he explained it, and I'm like, oh, and now it was just funny. So there's like all these like journeyman wrestlers over there, which you know, which really is the backbone of the territory system when you really think about it back in the day. And so then Saturday was like the meet and greet, and that's really cool. That's when I started talking to Mansfield earlier, and I was talking to him about the NWA On Demand, talking about his matches, and I was talking about him being a really underrated promo, and when I talk about underrated promos, he's one of them, and he's just, you can see his eyes just lit up, right, and he just wanted to talk and talk and talk with me.
Oh, yeah, you just complimented a wrestler,
yeah,
you know, who never, ever gets it. Yeah, let's talk.
And, you know, and it's, you know, we're talking about Southwest Championship Wrestling, you know, so it wasn't a territory, it wasn't like, you know, Carolinas or something, you know, or WWF, and so
2020.
Yeah, so he's talking about, his feud with Casey, and I'm like, he shaved your head, and you can tell he kind of pissed him off a little bit, but in a good way. And then he goes, yeah, I used to call them cowpokes because I used to piss off them Cowboys, Texas and stuff.
That was funny.
Yeah, it was just really great. And then I'm like, yeah, I'll let you go. Because, you know, you always feel like you're intruding on their time, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. And he's like, and he looked kind of like upset that I was like leaving because I felt like he wanted to talk to me. Yeah.
But you shouldn't have gone. He would have been chewing your ear off for like 3 hours, and you're like, okay.
But really cool. I got a vibe from Tiger that he was not a fan of Tully.
Really?
Yeah. Because I was talking about his match with Tully, the one we watched recently, where they went 25. And he's like, yeah, you know what? Me and Gino, we're on the same page, Tully. Not so much. He could have stayed down here and really, you know, been with us. But, you know, but then, you know, Tully did his own thing, you know, but whatever. And then when we'll get back to it, I printed out the art design that Mario does for our logo. And so I was going to get all the Houston wrestlers who work the territory to sign it. And so I get up to Mansfield, and he's like, man, this thing's beautiful. I'll sign it on the back. I go, no, sign it on the back, man. He goes, what do you want me to sign? I go, whatever. I go, four of these wrestlers, I don't want to be callous, but they're dead. Don't worry about, this is a podcast. I talk about Houston wrestling. I go, you guys are big parts of Houston wrestling. I'd like you to sign it. And he's like, all
Dad, right. Don't worry about that. He's dead.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't say that out loud. I'm just thinking about the dead wrestlers.
Oh,
I'm
shit. Like,
well, you know, I go, Wahoo, Bruiser, Chavo, and are dead. And the other three are alive, but half of them are dead on the poster here. There's plenty of space, you know, to sign
just
away.
Just have at it, Eddie. It's fine.
And then Eddie goes, oh man, there's your buddy right here on his poster to Tiger. So obviously, the Heat was a known fact, and I think maybe Tully might have been a little racist back in the day. I don't know.
Maybe I've never heard that, but
I've heard Tully had a chip on his shoulder, so I
definitely
see it.
Chip on his shoulder, and maybe they thought they could have kept something going, and he was like, "Fuck it," and went to Crockett, and there was all kinds of like, because his dad was the famous book. I know there was all kinds of politics and shit down there.
Yeah, for sure.
Gary Hart, you know, all that shit's in Gary Hart's book. All this Texas politics.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, there's tons of it, and so then you know, I get Tiger to sign in, and we're.
Neat.
Talking about it, I'm like, so I'm, you know, I'm asking him. So I go, I've seen you work babyface, I've seen you work heel. I've only seen your heel work as the Jive Tones, but I thought you were a much, much better babyface. What did you prefer doing? And then Mansfield goes, oh man, he was the best babyface. He could do anything. I'm like, yeah, man, that guy could sell. He showed fire. He had, I go, he was doing topes in 1979, way ahead of the curve. And he's like, yeah, I appreciate that. But he goes, I enjoyed being heel because I tried to be like a black Terry Funk or a black Dick Slater. I thought that was kind of a neat thing to see. Because it's always fun to play the bad guy.
That is very interesting. Yeah. You know, that shows where, you know, his influences are. You know, because you want to be a bad guy. And he's like, I want to be a black bad guy, just like those guys. That's a neat take that I would have liked. That was very much, it would have been ahead of its time.
Yeah. So, you know, because the only heel work I saw him was working as the Jive Tones in like '88 with Pez Watley. So they weren't a push act. Yeah, exactly. And then Mash was putting over his work and,
the Jive Tones.
Yeah. So I'm talking to Lynn Denon and I'm talking about this. I'm like, who came up with the bloated boot? Because I go, I think that for a mass wrestler, I think that psychology-wise, I think that's fascinating. Because most guys would load the mask up, like mass superstar would load the mask up. The assassin would load the mask up. Here, you're using a loaded boot, which is, and he goes, I go, it's so different. And then you can actually play around with that and load up your boot. And then when they're looking for the boot, you can load up your mask and heat that way. And he's like, he goes, all Bill Watts. And he goes, and that's brilliant. He goes, you know how many conspiracy ideas I came through the years fans have come up with about the loaded boot and how I load the boot and stuff? And he was giving me all these just, like, wacky things and stuff. Like, you'd have to be, like, a physicist to build this boot, you know?
So, that's hilarious.
So, of course, he's digging me because I'm putting over again, you know? I'm familiar with the man's career. So, the guys, I felt like they really, all the stuff I was talking to them about, they really, like, really, it was really appreciated.
They liked me.
Exactly, you know. I felt they were really appreciative of something, knowing about their history and knowing stuff. And then,
there's always going to be that wrestler, especially with the old guys, you know, with talking to the quote unquote marks thing. But see, these are guys who don't get a lot of this shit. They're in town for this thing once a year, what have you. And they go, okay, here's a mark. But look, he's older. He knows who he's talking about. Well, he knows all about me. You know, I'm sure there's more of like, hey, let's talk.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
I'm jealous as fuck. Let me just say.
Yeah. So I'm just having a field day. So I'm loving it. And I had questions for everybody. For the most part, because some of the people's work I wasn't familiar with. Like they had, you might remember her from Memphis, Moondog Fifi.
Moondog Fifi.
Yeah, I guess there was a female Moondog.
I know. Okay. You think I would?
Yeah, I wasn't familiar. There's some I just wasn't familiar with.
That's a fantastic gimmick.
Yeah.
How did that not work?
I went on it. She was there for a few years. It was like a 3 or 4 year run.
Huh. Never heard of her.
Yeah. And then so some of the ones I wasn't familiar with. But you know, some of the big ones were like Tatsumi Fujinami was there. Mm-hmm. Wendy Richter was there.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, she's a surprise appearance.
How tall is she in person?
She was sitting down, so I really couldn't really get a good look at her. I saw her standing up at times, but it was hard to... One, I wasn't thinking about how tall she was, so I wasn't trying to guesstimate. So I had the Grappler and Eddie Mansfield and Tiger Conway, they signed it. I had Wendy Richter sign the poster.
Oh, cool.
And here's the funny part. So, getting around the corner, and the big draws are Tatsumi Fujinami, and I got his autograph, and then I get to Mick Foley, and but I see him eyeballing the poster, right? Because it has Bruiser Brody on it, I would assume. Before I even say anything to him, he goes, "Man, it's a nice piece of artwork." And I'm like, "Oh, I appreciate it." I go, "This is, I do a podcast on Houston wrestling with my buddy, and we talk all about Houston." And I go, "Mr. Young, he's sitting next to Gary Young. They used to be tag partners in World Class and Continental." Right. And I go, "I'll get to you in a second, sir, because I want to talk to you about this great match."
I'll get to you in a second,
but, sir. But, But I go, and so we're talking about, I go, but I really like your wrist bracelet there, Mick. And Mr. Foley, I go, that's a real important cause. It's about autism. And he, mm-hmm. and he's like, oh, man, I really appreciate that, blah, blah, blah. And so I got him to sign my thing. But, I thought it was really cool that he really liked the NWA On Demand picture. And
Mick Foley, when I really look back at it, who's my favorite wrestler ever? And I'm like, it's Mick Foley. So that's, I'm going like, ooh, Mick Foley is somewhat aware of something we do.
Yeah, so I go to him. So, but here's the funny part. Okay. Not the funny part yet. But then I go to him. I go, but hey, I know you know Billy Corgan, right? And he goes, yeah, I know Billy. He goes, you just purchased that stuff. I go, yeah, man. Tell him if he gets to the library, don't sit on it, please. Right? So I won't have a podcast. And so then I get over, Mr. Young, I just saw you have the most incredible match with Gino Hernandez. You went 26 minutes. And he's like, yeah, I went to high school with him. And Mick, nice. Man, and Mick Foley's now. One, it's funny because I'm putting over a Gary Young's match, not a Mick Foley match, right? when you think of that, I bet I was the only one in the whole entire place that put over a Gary Young match.
Mick Foley's still in this conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mick Foley's right next. They're sitting next to each other. And so Mick Foley goes, I didn't know you went to high school with Gary Young. And he goes, technically, we didn't go to high school together, but we're right there, reach each other and stuff. And I was telling him about the match, and Gary Young's loving it. And you can tell, I think Mick Foley's like, someone's putting over Gary Young. I mean, this is something he'd probably write in his book.
I'm telling you, it's going to end up in one of his books.
You know, because I'm putting over Gary Young's 25-minute match with Gino Hernandez. And I'm like, yeah, and you guys didn't even touch for the first 5 minutes. It was incredible, blah, blah, blah. And, Gary's like, and I go, you're like the local, they're trying to build you up as like the local baby face. And he's like, man, so me and him were talking. He goes, man, you still living in Houston, blah, blah, blah. And we're just having just a normal, just great conversation. He's a super nice guy. Signed the poster. Yeah, right. But I just thought it was funny that I'm putting over Gary Young's. Because, like, I'm sure everyone else there was there. You know, Mick Foley was the draw of the meet and greet, right? Him and Fujinami. And I'm putting over Gary Young's match. Dude,
that might be the funniest thing I've heard in a long time.
And after I really realized that, I know what I just did. And I go, I think everyone would get a chuckle out of the fact that I'm putting over Gary Young's best, probably Gary Young's best match he's ever had. In front of Mick Foley.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, Foley, you know, in his head, he's probably not thinking, what kind of a weirdo is this who knows about Gary Young matches? He's probably fascinated by this.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Yeah. So he's going to work it into some story on something. Like he'll put this in his quote-unquote stand-up thing that he does. About telling wrestling stories and shit. This is going into that act. I guarantee it.
Yeah. And so on Twitter, I told the guy who wrote our thing, Mario. I go, hey, Mario. And I took a picture of it. And I go, and Mick. And I go, and I go, and I tag Mick Foley. I go, Mick Foley really liked the artwork. And then Mick Foley liked it on Twitter. So that was really something nice he didn't have to do. And so... kudos to him. Really cool dude.
He pushed a button. It's okay.
Yeah, but also, though, it's funny. At the Q&A of the day before, I'm seeing Larry Hennig, right?
Awesome.
And he was there, and I'm just eyeballing him, and I'm just absolutely terrified of Larry Hennig.
At his age, even how thick is that man?
Still, he's in great shape. He looks like a million bucks. He's still a pretty big dude. And so I honestly, it took me 15 minutes to gather the courage to go up and ask to take a picture with him. I get down on a knee. I go, sir, can I take a picture with you?
You got down on a knee?
Well, he was sitting in a chair.
Oh, I thought you were standing up and you got down on a knee. Yeah. Like you were proposing to him, sir. May I please have my picture taken with you?
All right. But he and so in my mind, I don't know if he really did, but in my mind, I hear this growl. Okay. You know.
That's great.
And so I get the picture taken. But also another Larry Hanning, two more Larry Hanning stories. Funny. I'm at the wrestling matches, and him and his wife, and it might have been a daughter or one of the Hennigs' wives. I think it was a daughter, because she kind of looked like Kurt Hennig in the face. So these kids are behind, and some lady goes, "Can we take my son get a picture with you?" He's like, "Sure." And they take a picture, and she goes, "Look, that's his father." And she has a picture of Kurt. And the kid's like, "Okay." And then goes, "But here, that's his grandfather." And shows a picture of Curtis Axel, and the kid pops. Realizing, oh, wow, that's Curtis Axel's grandfather.
That's the best. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. You know, because everything I've read and seen about Curtis Axel is he's a good dude. You know, yeah. I mean, he is. Forget what his talent level or any of that bullshit is. He's a good dude. He wants to get into training and stuff like that. So to know, though, that there's a kid out there who goes, "Oh, no, that's Curtis Axel's family?
Yeah.
That's awesome." I was like, that it means that guy touched a kid. Yeah, no, wait a minute, let me rephrase that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Curtis Axel does not touch children, I'm sorry. You know what I mean. Because you would never think that.
No, exactly. And Larry Hanning's a legend. And so I'm like,
an age thing.
It is.
It shows the family. It shows that family actually is cross generations.
Yeah, so I thought it was cool. And but I finally get to Larry Hennig for my autograph.
Oh, yeah.
And I go, "Sir, I just want to let you know it took me 15 minutes to gather up the courage to ask for a picture with you the other day because you still scare the shit out of me." And he looks at me and just starts laughing. Shaking his head laughing like, you mark. He goes, "I'm an old man." You know, he's thinking of something.
Did he call you a mark?
No, he didn't. But you can tell. And then the other wrestler next to him, I forget who it was, goes, "Yeah, he scares the shit out of me, too." Yeah.
Oh, dude, the hits just keep coming. This sounds like the... Holy fuck, I am so jealous of you, but these stories are amazing. If this is suddenly the best advertisement to go to this.
Oh, yeah. Trust me.
Holy shit.
It was awesome. And then I get down and I talk to Wendy Richter and talk to how about the service, and we've seen her as cowgirl Wendy Richter. And she kind of got a kick out of that. And then I was on my way and went back to the hotel, had breakfast with Bump.
Wendy?
But it was cool because a bunch of the rest was there. I mean, I saw Tiger. He, his room was, right across from mine and stuff. And it was funny. The first day, I'd already met him. And then I see him at the hotel. And I see him. He sees me. But I didn't say anything to him because I didn't want to bother him. You know what I'm saying? But then I felt... Then we went to the Q&A that night. And then... he goes, "Hey, if you see the wrestlers, just go up and say hi to him." I'm like, "Okay, I hope that wasn't aimed at me for not going up and saying hi." So I made sure I said hi to him the next time I saw him at the hotel.
He cried. He was just like, "It's Pete. Why is he not coming? We met the other day."
Yeah. I felt you just don't want to intrude on their private time and stuff.
I know.
Yeah, one of those things. But yeah, overall, you know, man.
Tiger's sitting in his car going, "Man, I thought we hit it off."
Yeah.
Out the way.
But overall, man, just totally, totally great experience.
It sounds that's so amazing. Those stories are tremendous. And kudos to you. And that's, wow, you're taking, because you saved all that.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't. You sent us a few pictures, said it was kind of cool. You saved all that material for this show.
Yeah, I did.
Just blew my mind. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, and I'm a lazy typer. So typist.
That's
so
it.
But yeah, I'm definitely like I went over and told Cowboy Mentality, you know, you got me coming every year now.
By next year, you're going to be the guy everyone knows, and you're like totally, you're going to be part of the crew.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But it was really cool and stuff. And I can't put it over enough. You're in the Texas area, the Wichita Falls area. Stop in for 2 hours. It costs $3 to tour this incredible museum. That's nothing. And it's 2 hours of time and stuff. I mean, I'm not going to say Wichita Falls is the most beautiful area.
Is Wichita Falls really betting everything on this?
No, not at all. But it's, I mean, it's a nonprofit organization.
Flint, Michigan. Like Flint, Michigan bet it all on that performance center?
No. It's a pretty rural thing. I end up, it was funny. I thought, I took a cab around town the first day, but it's like ringing, you know, started getting expensive. So I'm like, I'll take a bus if I need to go anywhere far. So I go online. There's no bus guys. You got to call. So I had to call to get directions to get on a bus. So they give it to me, which is fine. And man, the bus driver, I go, hey, I'm not real familiar with this area. I'm visiting. I need to get off at this stop. Can you tell me when it comes up? If I remember.
If I remember.
Okay, in the busting town of Wichita Falls, where there's me and one other person on the bus, you're going to forget that I asked you this question. Thanks a lot.
Now, if I may ask, that all depends on how it was said. Was the person elderly and saying, if I remember?
No, I mean, he was cocky. He was old, but he was just being a dick. I mean, I know the difference. Okay. Yeah.
Maybe he's suffering from Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I mean, this is an old school bus where, like, I don't know, have you been on a bus recently?
No.
Okay, well, most buses you put your money in and they have, like, electronical things. Here, all you do is.
No, that's a lie. Just a few months ago, I was on a bus, but. So
okay, but here it was like you stuff it in like a little thing, and he's like looking to make sure I put the change in too. It's like, all right,
these goddamn buses are just like these fans chanting their "this is awesome" bullshit.
So I thought he was a real asshole. It's like, all right, man, I'm just killing him with kindness. Thank you.
Thanks. Is there a Yelp thing you could do?
Yeah, Yelp in Wichita Falls.
Wichita Falls.
But hey, man, that's enough about my trip, which was incredible.
Oh, bravo, sir.
But let's look at let's start off some matches, man. Why don't we start off with El Bracero and Jeff Sword?
Okay.
All this is from the same card. And this is even the coolest thing was. On my last night, I get home from the thing, and all of a sudden I get home and there's footage on NWA On Demand. I'm like, yes.
I know, huh?
Yeah. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, dude, and trust me, all that was fantastic. But the story is also, we were just, the last podcast we did, we're like, yeah, we'll be back whenever. And hey, there was a drop, so.
Yeah, it was funny. This was after I talked to Mick Foley about asking Billy to not sit on the footage, so that was anything to do with it.
It could be. He got on the phone right away. He said, "Billy,
my buddy Pete putting over Gary Young's work."
I'm gonna do it. I'd have to do it in Mankind voice. I was like, "Billy, I need you to do me a favor."
Oh man. Yeah, if it means anything, the last thing I heard, he did an interview with Billy Corgan, and he talked about it for like 2 minutes. And he says 97% of the paperwork's been done, so who knows where that means. But man, Bracero, he's a guy we've seen a little bit. He had a real fun match with Tully on this thing before. And Matt D describes him perfectly, which is he's like the best Mondo Guerrero in the world. And I feel that's kind of right what he is. I mean, we have Jeff Sword. He's pretty much the base, and he's kind of Lenny Bracero, it's like a showcase for Bracero doing all his unique offense, his dives, and his lucha stuff. And I thought it was a great way to get Bracero over. I thought it was a really fun match. What about you?
I would go with Bracero is the greatest Mexican Sal Balomo.
Take that, Matty.
It all depends on what you grew up with. You know, he's got the cool fucking goatee that looks like the devil, you know, and he's very flamboyant.
Yep.
And it's, you know, and Jeff Sword is exactly what you said, a base. He's doing what he can do, and this guy is doing ta-da, you know, all around. Everything's a big ta-da, and it's fun, and it's maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's so fun. The crowd dug Bracero.
Great. It's actually a great opening match when you think about it.
Yeah, I dug it. You know, I mean, there was a lot of that, like, luchador, matador shit.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, like, I always giggle at. But, exactly. But pops that crowd. Here's something quick and exciting to start your evening.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, here, on that note, why don't we take a break? Because I did ramble.
Because I need to go get what the one thing you could hear throughout this match being shouted was the guy going, "Call Bear!" throughout the whole match. I loved it.
Great segue. And we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog, of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. And we're going to look at Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Jake Roberts again.
Ooh.
December 16th, 1983. Pair of WWE Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys I've met. Hacksaw comes across as real genuine. Jake, he comes across like a snake. He comes across as the guy trying to fleece his marks.
Here's the thing about that, okay? We do know that he is still sober, but being sober has nothing to do with whether or not you fleece the marks.
No, very true. Very true. And you know what? DDP is about as carny as they get, too. So
you know what, though? The shit works. So first thought. When I first heard that shit, I was like, that's the most carny bullshit I ever heard of. But the proof's in the pudding. I'm not doing a free ad like he needs it. But yeah, that's how he gets it over, because he's such a fucking guardy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, God bless him. Well, what do you think of the match, man?
I liked it. So Duggan's a babyface here. Jake is heel. And we got Paul on commentary, and he's describing the combatants. And he mentions that Jake wears the colorful long trousers. And then Paul, I love Paul Vosch, but this one is fantastic. This, he was on mushrooms. He goes, and his opponent doesn't need long trousers to know what the word color means. And I rewound it 5 times. I went, I don't understand what that means whatsoever. And he went on to mention Hacksaw Jim Duggan being tough. And I went, huh? But he said it with conviction, which is wonderful. And then he says, if I ever knew a guy qualified to be a snake exterminator, it's Hacksaw Duggan. I was like, oh, well, he's qualified for that, huh?
He went to school.
Yeah, if ever I, he's a graduate. He was either wrestling, or that was his major in college, I believe. It was snake extermination. And then Paul does, I love this. They're doing a lot of hammerlocks and shit
at
the beginning of this match. So Paul says that he basically said, he's talking about what the hammerlock does, and he doesn't sell that it hurts. He says that when you put it in a position where it just can't move any farther, that atrophy will start to happen, and they have an effect on the brain and how the electrical impulses of the brain affect the muscles in the arm. And I was like, you brought it back. Bravo. I've never heard that. And that sounds amazing. Love it. And it's picking up, getting more brawling at the end. And I'm really enjoying it, but they apparently have a upcoming show. That's the last show of the year.
They're pushing this thing hard.
Holy shit. Are they pushing? Is he pushing this thing hard? And it's, he brings the conversation around to this no matter what happens. It's genius how he does this. He at one point says, because it's right around Christmas time, it's right after Christmas.
Yeah.
Why not get your tickets for this show as Christmas presents for all your friends and loved ones? It's one-stop shopping. And boom, like that, all of your Christmas shopping done. In fact, you come down to, and it's the address. He's like, we've got parking. It's hard to find that, you know, in down in Houston. We have courtesy. And if you get here by, you know, Tuesday, you'll get good tickets. And I was like, this is tremendous. He just builds it up and builds it up and builds it up. And one of the matches on this card is Nick Bockwinkel defending the AWA title against Mr. Wrestling 2. And at one point in the match, Jake hits his high knee lift, and Paul Vosch says, oh, look at that. He just used Mr. Wrestling 2's favorite move. You can see next week at the big show when he could possibly use it on Nick Bockwinkel. I went, holy shit.
Yeah, it technically wasn't next week, but it was on the 30th. Whatever. But I know, the next show, but yeah.
Whatever. Any opportunity. And he's talking about he starts with the loyalty of the Houston fans. He's like, the weather was terrible but they came out because we love you and we know you love us and you could do us a favor, right? Because we're going to set a record. Let's all set a record together for the biggest show of the year, the last one. And then just boom, boom, boom through this. And all around the end, the match part of this, towards the end, Duggan and Jake are having a really fun match with a lot of great fucking stiff right hands and elbows and shit. Jake is fucking great here, and so is Duggan. And Duggan gets the fucking pin with the big shoulder block spear. Boom, boom, 1, 2, 3 on Jake at a time where he didn't get pinned a lot. And And as Duggan's out, Jake turns into the snake character, and he's trying to slither up. And Duggan turns around, he's like backing off. And the fans are warning Duggan. He's like, turn around, turn around. And he's like, yeah, getting his tape undone, ready to. And he's in the ring, and Duggan is walking up the aisle. And yet this works. Like, somehow he maybe could strike from there. So, bravo. I love this.
Yeah. It is like Matt D was telling me, like, because he's been watching this stuff with us. And he goes, I want to buy a ticket to 12:30
Who fucking would?
I mean, this is like the hard sell. I mean,
you'd feel like a dick if you didn't.
I know. Or you're missing, like, the show of the year.
Oh, like, Paul Bosch, this, at some point he's going to lay it out. He's like, look, you know, we've done a lot for you over the years, and you owe it to me, you cocksucker.
You owe it to me. You little shits, I've said happy birthday to you. I expect you and your parents down here. But, man, yeah.
I've had to learn names. I have done, you know, to submit, put on a big smile for you people. So get your fucking asses down there on the 30th. Thank you. Yeah. Oh. That's.
Yeah, I enjoyed the match too. Not as much as you.
I liked the second half of it.
Yeah, it took a while to get going.
And it was an 11-minute match. So.
Yeah, I just don't think these guys mesh real well together because Hacksaw's a pure brawler. Jake is more like the methodical storyteller, psychology guy who he takes minimal bumps, you know, so it wasn't, I just didn't think they meshed real well. Like you see, when you have Duggan working an arm, you're, it's kind of scary. That's not what you want to see Duggan do. I thought it was a nice stomp to Jake's shoulder, and I thought Duggan did a decent job working the arm, but again, it's not his immediate, it's not his specialty. When Jake gets into control, you see some nice punches by Jake and the knee lift. I love that when he cuts off Duggan's comeback and Jake uses the knee lift to put Duggan down. But eventually, you know, Duggan, you know, powers up, makes the comeback in the pin. I thought it was a good, you know, good solid match though. Probably in the 2-star range. I'm going to remember, two weeks from now. If I didn't have notes, I wouldn't even remember anything.
Yeah, but so, what you will remember is that you're going to buy tickets for the goddamn 30th. That's what you're going to remember.
Hell yeah.
I'll tell you what, Sharmaka. I'm speaking to you from the grave. You're going to show up at that address as parking, and you're going to try to buy tickets, and it's not even a ticket sales place anymore.
Oh, man. But now, one of my favorites. Jose Lothario versus Black Gordman. And we open up with some promos. And this is Jose's return to the promotion. He's in this badass suit. And he has a... What?
No, I'm sorry, I coughed.
He has this great suit on. He just comes across as like a Houston star, Houston legend. And then Gordman cuts... It seems like a strong-worded promo in Spanish. And of course, Paul Hosh is hard selling the 12:30 show. Hard selling it, yeah. We get to the match, and I'm absolutely marking out for Lothario's parka. I think that's cool as hell. And then Gordman and Paul harbors him right off the bat, and Gordman's throwing hands, and then Lothario returns the favor. And then we get this, rolls into this like super fun lucha spot we get. And again, Lothario busts out of that with throwing more hands, and Gordman, he starts trying to work over the midsection. We see a boot, then a knee, and a slam on the stomach. Some punches into the breadbasket. Kind of like there was like a psychology to what Gordman was doing here. I like Gordman's heat is built around him roughhousing Jose and working over the stomach. But the crowd is totally rallying behind Jose. And we get this really fun punch exchange. And that uppercut finish was pretty awesome. Where he fakes with the left and goes with the overhand right. Pretty awesome. 3 stars. In the 2 and 3/4 3-star range. Really good for what we got. Real quick 6-minute heated match and sets up what they're going to do next in a couple weeks from here anyway. So good stuff. What you make of
it? Well, no, that wasn't it. At the end, it wasn't that he faked with the left and got him with the overhand right.
No, it was vice versa.
Yeah, no. He faked with the overhand right and popped him with the left with an uppercut.
Yeah.
And it fucking ruled. It was as great a knockout finisher as you've ever seen. Like, and remember Ronnie Garvin used to do them in the NWA and Crockett, and there was a lot of really cool ones depending on who was selling it.
Lawler.
Yeah, you know, I'm talking about like his finishing move is a punching a guy in the fucking face, which is Lothario's. He's the super sock. That's his fucking move.
Yep.
You know, he just punched you in the fucking jaw and knocked you out. And so Garvin had a lot of really.
And I think he looks better than Ronnie.
Oh, that's the point. I'm struggling to get to. So thank you. But yes, I thought that this looked. I mean, because it's always the whole thing. Like, look at, you know, here's my right. You should have watched the left. You know,
yep.
That's what it was. And it's all I wrote down. Also, was just these super sucks. The promos. One thing about the promos, also Paul with. Yeah, Jose's giving a promo in English a little bit, and then he just says, tell him in Spanish. And he does it. And it's around Christmas time again, because it's the only word I understood with Blackie Gordman, and his was Navidad. So,
yeah, but, Christmas time.
Yeah, so I heard that in there. And 12:30 and Navidad. But Gordman's promo seemed like, if I understood Spanish, it sounded awesome.
Yeah.
Like he was like, seemed like he was referencing stuff. He's like, "Dos tuertas de la sed, the tres diablos," and shit like that. And I'm like, "Oh, that sounds cool."
Yeah, I think Gordman and he's going to wrestle Bracero on that show,
right?
And I think that would be a pretty good.
So Hacksaw Duggan will be wrestling that guy who's the only friend of the Russians, Krusha Darsal. Brought that up a few times.
Yep, and then we have Jose and Hacksaw Reed.
Oh yes.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
But here, why don't we take a break, and we come back, and we'll get the main event. All right?
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back, and we're back, and we're looking at the Junkyard Dog versus Nikolai Volkov from December 16th, 1983. What'd you make of this one, Johnny?
Okay, well, first of all, I have to share that, you know, we were waiting and seeing what was going to happen with the service. And, you know, and I was being positive, but, you know, who knows? And boom, oh, no, we get a match. What is it? It's Junkyard Dog versus Nikolai Volkov. And I immediately was going, me and Pete might be the only guys who know that that's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Based on what we know about what this footage is. But if you're people like, you know, who are like, I don't know if I want to get into this, you know, they're like, that's the match? Because they're only thinking of them in the WWF.
Yeah.
At the, you know, end of their careers, basically.
Yep.
And this is a pretty fun match. You know, I really dug it, actually. But
I'm with you.
Yeah, Volkov, excuse me, has a different Russian anthem than the one he sang in WWF, which I thought was very interesting, and he was very angry with it. And they are pelting the fucking ring with crushed-up soda.
Fuck, yeah, yes, he's carrying some serious heat here.
Big time, big time. The announcer is in the ring while they're throwing shit, and he's just saying, don't fucking throw shit, fuckers. And and so they're throwing it at him. He points the guy out, and you know, he's like, I just saw you, you're gone. And big time heat on Nikolai, to start this off. There's a fat guy in the front row with a USA shirt just flexing at him and fucking, fuck you, motherfucker. Who's entertaining me a lot. And the match itself, of course, lets you break it down. I was surprised that Volkov won.
Yeah.
But he took some cheating and his, you know, very awkward press the guy over the head down into a backbreaker that he does as safely as possible.
Yeah.
You know, good on him. You know,
which just shows him he's pretty damn strong to be able to get the dog up, though.
Yeah, like get him up. And I mean, he does it well enough. You know, he's like, yeah, I'm going to do this safely. And crowd's fucking going crazy. Junker Dog is beat by Nikolai fucking Volkov. Within 6 months, they're both in WWF, which is,
yeah.
They both went back right around Volkov went back and he arrived right around the same time.
Yep.
You know, so that's some interesting booking.
Yeah, because later on they have this elimination match where both these guys are in it. And same with Tito. It was like this big guys fixing to go back to the WWF type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But man, yeah, I love this. I mean, Volkov is carrying serious heat. Like, this is like what the heat he got in the WWF is almost comical. You know, if you look at the Rock, when you look at the Rock and Sock era type stuff, not with the Bruno stuff, but
I was at a show at the Spectrum where someone hit him in the head with an apple. So
I'm not okay. I might digress, but this is pretty nuclear here. I mean, it is. I mean, pretty darn
neat. And may I add, he was singing the national anthem at the time, and he got hit in the head with an apple, and he didn't miss a beat and kept singing.
Okay. I take it back. I mean, he got heat in the WWF, don't get me wrong. I mean, apple heat. Here, this is like throwing trash at him, the heat. And then Volkov's carrying the heat. They're pelting him with trash, booing his ass out.
Trash hurts more than an apple.
It's true. You never know.
Just they're animals.
And then this is all going on as he's singing the Russian national anthem. And you see Boss talk to the ring announcer. And then all of a sudden we get the everyone to their seats announcement.
Oh, yeah. Because
Boss is feeling the heat. And right off the bat, we get this really fun brawl between the two. Then we see JUID start working the arm. And his work is really fun on it. He's using hammer locks. He's working it with the ropes. He's punching the arm. And one of my favorite spots, he's using headbutts on it. Totally digging that. Volkov is putting all this over huge, so he's selling him. This is fantastic. Crowd, of course, is like way behind JYD. Volkov with an eye rake, which I loved how that sets up the heat. His work on top isn't all that interesting, but the crowd heat totally makes up for it. So, I don't care. He's so hot. He's so heated. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what he's doing. He's getting these nuclear reactions. We get this big bump where the ref goes to the floor, and so does Nikolai. That was a little convoluted. But, God, Nikolai took a pretty big bump on that.
So did the ref.
So did the ref. Back in while the ref is distracted, Volkov posts JYD, and he's just busted open. He barely makes it in on the count. A big stomp to the back of the head and dog's face goes right into the mat. That's pretty vicious. And then the press slam we get, it was a bit sloppy, but gets the pin for the Volkov. And man, the crowd wants Volkov's blood at that finish. We get 3.25-star match on my end. Super heated. I know we're going to get these guys in the cage at some point. God, this was, I mean, the heat here was just scary hot,
Totally. I mean, I also love the yell. Junkyard Dog does that cell like where he got chopped in the throat and can't breathe, and he falls down like a tree. He's like, and he's laying there in the close up, and he's like gasping for air, and his eyes are bugging out. Yeah. And it's a little comical, but he's playing to an arena without TV screens around it. You know, so someone in the cheap seats is seeing his selling of that and being like, oh, my God, he can't breathe.
Dog. It was hot. And the work was good. I mean, I might have been one of Nikolai Volkov's best matches he's ever had. I mean, I found out this was a Volkoff masterpiece here, honestly.
Ooh,
I mean,
no.
Dog was really good, don't get me wrong, but Volkoff, I thought was
Volkoff masterpiece.
Yep, it happens. It happens. But hey, man, on
I think you're just saying that because we watched a lot of a little bit of Volkoff on Titans, and you hate WWF so much. I was like, some of that young Volkoff stuff is, you know, pretty good.
I don't hate WWF. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I like about WWF.
I'm teasing.
But I'd rather watch
this. Was great. You know, he was full of. I mean, he's old here. I mean, this guy's been around forever.
Forever.
And
I mean,
he was moving around and doing some impressive shit.
Yeah, I mean, he was working Bruno in the 70s, for Christ's sake.
He was Beppo Mongol and shit in the late 60s.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around. He's been freaking around. Man, so that's enough for today on NWA On Demand, Space City. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Nope, not a thing. What I want to plug is I want to tell everyone else to please spread this show just for the first half with Pete's stories about the Hall of Fame thing. You know, if you dig this show and you want other people to listen to it, please just talk about that because those stories were tremendous.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
I loved them. Loved it.
Appreciate it, brother. Yeah. And follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling, and hopefully we'll see you guys next week. Have a good one.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden. King of the Hill, tag team champion with Al Madrill, before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes, the Kai is mine.